Hello and welcome to G.L. Horton's Stage Page. Today is Sunday, June 17th, 2007, Father's Day. We could have set up a Father's Day show, but that would have meant I'd have to remember where all this material was when I got around to wanting to use it. Too much trouble. Last week I told you our good old friend Will Sackman had died. Will was not one to enjoy having a fuss made over his life, so we made only a small fuss by gathering together at the Cambridge River Festival, which he helped start nearly 30 years ago, to sit around talking about him and reading his plays. This open-air affair for kids of all ages was the perfect setting for it. You can hear the kids in the background while Marianne Connolly talks about him, after which we'll read one of his plays. Here's Marianne.
My name's Marianne Donnelly, and I had the pleasure of meeting William Sackman in 1985 at the Cambridge River Festival, where I'm sitting right now in the 28th year, many years later. I was a folk singer, and William had hired me to perform on the folk stage, and out of nowhere came a rainstorm, and I was looking, where's Will Sackman, because that's who I was supposed to check in with. And they pointed him out, and I saw him with his hair, beautiful hair, flying sideways, and a cap on his head, and I said, hey, Mr. Sackman, I'm here for the folk stage. And he was mumbling, and I said, why are you so upset? And he said, oh, because it's going to rain. I said, well, hey, mister, it's not your fault that it's going to rain. And he says, no, it's not my fault, but I have to fix it. And then he proceeded to put up a tarp, which was kind of appreciated by those of us who had been told to stand between two trees. And after he'd fixed it, of course, the rain subsided and the day continued to be beautiful. I was kind of afraid of him, to be honest. When I first met him, he was kind of wonderfully overwhelming. And I called a few days later to the Arts Council and I said, hey, Mr. Sackman, I just want to thank you so much for giving me a chance to be at the River Festival. And so we started talking, and he was very, very gracious about giving me information about who else I should talk to in town. I had just graduated from Harvard and had moved to an apartment on Massachusetts Avenue, and he told me about Sandy Sheehan, who lived at the Sandy Sheehan Sandy's Music Store, which is still existent today here in 2007 on Mass Avenue, at 850 Mass Avenue. And he put me in touch with several other musicians and people who, you know, would be good people to know in town. So then I said, well, listen, can I call you back if I have any more questions? And then it seemed like I started manufacturing questions to call this guy, because it seemed no matter what I asked, he had, not only could he answer the question, but he could tell you things that were related to it, how it came to be in existence, how you could find it, how you should look it up, what other topics were related to it. It didn't matter whether it was about how the earth moves, theater setup, puppetry design, guitar music, folk music history, Shakespeare, the ionosphere. I mean, these are actual topics I've had with the man, and I started just talking to him on a regular basis, and we kind of had sort of a nice, kind of a nice vibe going on. And pretty soon, I'd say about a year and a half into this, he started inviting me to parties where he was with his friends from the theater or puppetry and computer worlds, and I met a lot of his friends. William and I talked on the phone. My phone records would, not that I need to prove it, but the phone records would stand that. I'd say we talked on the phone at least three times a week for 20-something years. We were together often, and in 1988, we actually became lovers. I had sublet this huge house, a phenomenal mansion, basically. It was during the rent control days, and so I had sublet my apartment, and I figured my rent would pay itself, and I was going to have this big mansion up on, I'm going to say Lexington for now, but anyway, I could drive by it and I could see it in my head just before you turn onto Fresh Pond, whatever street that is. And I was just so happy to have a big house. I'd moved over just enough stuff, like, to have lawn furniture, whatever. So he'd come over and I'd cook dinner, and he loved scallops. He loved scallops tremendously. He loved really any kind of food. And he was a gourmand. I mean, he really could tell you everything about deep history, how food's produced, the different cultures that designed it, how to cook it properly, the different seasonal differences between northern and southern French cuisine. I can't describe to you the depth and the breadth of this man's brain. I mean, he just was brilliant. I mean, he was Einstein and Buddha rolled into one. He wasn't, you know, like, specifically into Buddha at all, but I can't think of a better image. Somebody that would be considered big and good-hearted and sort of here right now, do what you can right now. William had an extraordinary heart. He gave to everybody he ever met. He gave of his mind, of his time, his designs, his opinions. His opinions were pretty strong. A lot of people would, you know, balk at first when, if they weren't ready to grow, they weren't ready to meet Will. If the phrase, when you're ready, the teacher comes, is appropriate, then William was the master teacher in many topics. And if you asked him, what did you think of my performance, he would tell you. And he would not hide. You know, he'd be gentle about it, but very firm, very clear. Now, here, You have a pretty good idea, but it's not fleshed out. I'm trying to do his voice for you. But what you should do is you should eliminate this, and you should strengthen that. And what about the beginning and the middle and the end? And you need to flesh out the characters, and you need to think about the costume, and does it really support the character? And then he would tell you who you should work with in the community to build your character or get your stuff done. He knew everybody. Everybody, but he knew so many people. And what we're finding out now, strangely, is as we all come together over this, that we're one or two, three people removed from all the other people that knew him in so many ways. He touched so many communities. He had several parallel lives, I would say. And he lived all these lives very ethically, consistently, lovingly. William had a lot of phrases that he liked to use with me. One of my favorites, and I may be misquoting it slightly, is from T.S. Eliot. He would say, "I am like the cat who walks, and every place is the same to me." Now, I may have left a few words out, but that's, if you're a T.S. Eliot person, you could find out the right words. He also used to say to me, whenever we had adventures that were really like big to-dos at the River Festival or big to-dos in Earth Day Cambridge, we worked on together for 3 years and such like that, he would say, "Well, it's Newton's theory of entropy. You can't win, you can't break even, and you can't get out of the game." And he would make that face that those of us that know him would remember, kind of like, how can you say that on a pod? But I don't know, his upper lip over his lower lip and kind of a, I don't know, his eyebrows would go up and it would just be, you had to be there. You just had to know him. William could be counted on. He'd always show up when he said. He'd stay longer than anybody else at anything. He would always be the one to clean up. He'd be the one to be in the background. He would never, absolutely never take front stage. He really didn't like to be publicly acknowledged, you know, like big parades or such like that. But today, we're going to do a moderate thing. This is June 16th, 2007 at the Cambridge River Festival, and David Mayer, one of his great friends, and also Geraldine Horton, Gordon Tilley, and anyway, many of his friends are here today. They've done the extraordinary task of digging out copies of his plays and trying to figure out what's the right way to celebrate this man who did himself would not want to be celebrated in a large way. So we were lucky enough to get a fantastic obituary which showed up yesterday on Friday the 15th of June in the page D5 in the Boston Globe, and that was written by Brian Marcoud, and it has a beautiful, beautiful photograph that was from the Arts Council that hopefully they'll make a big copy of that and keep one maybe, you know, maybe in their walls or make sure that it doesn't get lost. It's a wonderful picture with him with his Punch and Judy puppets. He was a Punch and Judy expert, and I'm happy to say that his Punch and Judy puppets are now at the Puppet Showplace in Brookline, and I turned those over, and we still had not had contact with the family, but this was 7 or 8 days later, and I felt that was the most honorable thing I could do, having basically the puppets in my domain, donated them directly to the Puppet Showplace immediately, along with this Punch and Judy book, and some big marionette that I'm embarrassed to tell you. William could have been he would have been able to tell you what the marionette was, and how it was designed, and what it was made out of, and who made it, and what model, what references, why was the hat turned a certain way, why was the nose a certain way. Everything had meaning for him. His life was full of incredible amounts of layers of meaning. And the thing that shines, he was a bit of a paradox, because on the one hand you can say I used to call him my pet curmudgeon. My pet curmudgeon. "Are you a curmudgeon or not? You're a curmudgeon." And I would ruff him on the head and he would go, "Arr!" But it was kind of like we turned his grouchy part into sort of a pet for us. And sometimes, it really was never a problem. We never had a big fight. We used to disagree, and we would disagree on certain, you know, philosophical points, but not so much as that. We never had an out-and-out fight, and I know that's hard to believe, to know somebody for 22 years, but that's the real truth. He lived partly out of my apartment. He lived partly out of Geraldine's apartment. He stored a lot of stuff in his apartment. Much of it has sentimental value, and you know, he used to save things so that he knew that if there was a festival, he'd have the tape and the scissors and the hammers and the puppets and the strings and all that. Okay, so I saw a person that I wasn't sure was Sarah Petey. She is a phenomenal, extraordinary puppeteer who loved William tremendously, and she's with the Back Alley Puppets. They make puppets down behind in Boston. The reason they call it Back Alley Puppets is you have to go down the back alley in the back of a church. I'm going to say it's Emmanuel, but I might be wrong on that point right now. It's been a while since I recall the name of the church, but it's right behind the Ritz-Carlton anyway. And the Back Alley Puppets, he loved them. He would spend hours down there helping them design puppets, and they're sort of related to Breton Puppet, which would be Schumann's phenomenal group, started in roughly 62. William knew Peter Schumann and loved his work, and felt that Peter Schumann embodied for William the essence and the height of what you could become as not only an artist but as a functional social activist, bringing communities together, causing events to happen where diverse people of many kinds would be able to come together and just hang out and discover each other. And William was a very subtle guy in a number of ways. He was not subtle in other ways. It's kind of hard to... He's, like I say, he's a paradox, you know. On the one hand, he was subtle. On the other hand, he was very blatant. On the one hand, he was grouchy. On the other hand, he was very loving. But anyway, I'm feeling kind of like I've said as much as I can possibly say. I'm going to hand this phenomenal machine back over to David Mayer.
Hey, thanks, Marianne. Why don't you pause for a breath before we launch into his play, The Next Day? This may well be its first public performance. We'll try to get it a second one sometime soon. Jolyn and Robert Bonato read a married couple, Marianne reads their friend, and Gordon Talley's reads both the President and Reverend Bob. Here's Will Stackman's play, The Next Day.
George! There's nobody home at the Wilsons next door.
Yes, dear.
Their back door was wide open.
That isn't smart.
So I knocked and went in. It didn't look like anyone had had breakfast.
Well, they probably had to leave early.
Both their cars are there. I looked in their garage.
Their daughter must have picked them up.
I don't think she's in town.
Quite the little mystery you've got there.
George, this could be serious. Anyway, I closed their back door.
Wouldn't want a feral coyote getting into their kitchen. Look, Madge, I'm sure they just went off with friends.
I'm going to call the Schmidts. They might know. They're not picking up. Well, both their cars are in the driveway. Boy, it is awfully quiet around here
today. Well, that's why we moved to the suburbs, remember?
It's too quiet.
Shall I go start the lawnmower?
Oh, here comes somebody. Oh, it's Bixie. Hi, Bixie. Come on in.
Oh, everybody's gone. Well, not everybody. At least four of my friends. And when I came past the church, Pastor Brinkley was just sitting there on the steps, like it was the end of the world. Like he couldn't see me.
Well, I guess he saw something.
What aren't you telling us, George?
I've been trying to figure out how to tell you how, since you noticed the Wilsons were gone.
Tell me what?
It's the rapture.
I knew it! People don't go off and leave their doors open.
The Wilsons left their back door open.
The Monroes left their front door open. And that's Celia for you.
Well, how did you know?
I was up late watching TV and this bright light came on outside.
And you didn't wake me up?
You took one of your pills, remember?
What did you see, George?
Well, it was almost like a movie. The Wilsons came out of their house and stood in the driveway. The light got brighter and up they went. I looked across the street and the Schmidts were ascending too. You know, I didn't feel the slightest urge to join them.
We missed the rapture.
Now we don't have to spend eternity with the Wilsons.
But we're damned.
Well, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't.
I'm not a bad person. I drink too much sometimes.
You're a very good person, Bitsy.
I think you really had to want to go.
What about Pastor Brinkley?
Well, he was never very big on the whole idea.
It was mostly George McComber's thing. I mean, he started the study group, and he wanted me to teach about it in Sunday school.
Why didn't you?
Oh, the kids have enough crazy ideas.
Well, there wasn't anything on the TV. Of course, what do you expect on a Saturday morning? But maybe we should check.
The clicker is not working.
It quit after the light went away, but the knobs still work.
You know, it's been ages since I've actually touched a TV set.
Well, cable's not working now either. Thank God for rabbit ears.
My fellow Americans.
Bet he's disappointed.
The phenomenon which occurred late last night, which resulted in the disappearance of thousands of good Americans, is being investigated by your Department of Homeland Security. Now, there is no reason to believe it was the work of terrorists, nor should any conclusions be drawn as to its possible religious significance. It's too early to tell. Our science advisors tell us that the massive disruption of electrical equipment suggests that these events might be related to increased solar activity in sunspots. But it's too early to tell. There's no cause for alarm. Investigations of each disappearance will be made in a timely fashion. Concerned citizens are urged to contact the FBI if they have any specific information.
Yeah, like I'm going to tell one of them.
Now, at times like this, we must all stand together, just like our brave troops abroad, and stay the course.
This is going to be interesting. They're going to try and cover it up. He didn't get to go, so it wasn't the real thing. Next thing, it'll be aliens on Fox.
You think we should go out and look around? Well, maybe pick up some groceries.
Yes, just act normal.
George, I'm scared. We've reached the end of days.
Sun's still shining. Might rain later.
Well, I'm not scared. Serves them right.
Who?
George McComber and his friends. So sure they were. Getting in line for heaven.
Well, that's what it's supposed to be.
Suppose it wasn't. Suppose it was aliens.
Oh, there isn't any such thing as aliens.
Oh, I wouldn't be so sure about that. George always seemed pretty alien to me.
He used to be an Episcopalian, but they threw him out.
No, I mean, look at it this way. Suppose you wanted to abduct a whole lot of people.
Why?
Well, for sex slaves.
The Wilsons?
Maybe aliens are into boring. More likely for breeding stock, or maybe food.
That was on The Simpsons.
Well, look, it doesn't matter. You get a batch of people to get this rapture thing going. You get them believing in the lights, and then one night it's harvest time.
Hello? Oh, Reverend Brinkley. Well, yes, George is here. He wants to talk to you.
Me? Oh, okay. Hey, Bob, how's it going? Yeah, I suppose we could do that. And then come down to the church. Well, who else is going to be there? You did? Well, I don't know. No, I didn't see anything last night. I slept like a log. But I'll check the neighborhood and call you back. He called the FBI. They're here already. Maybe they were in on it.
In on what?
Whatever's on. Look, Bitsy, my dear, why don't you go see if anyone else on the street is missing, then go down to the church. But don't go in. Just have a look around.
In case there's...
In case. Anyone sees you, tell them you wanted to get something at the Sunday school.
Bitsy, give me a hug.
No.
Did you gas up your car yesterday?
Like always. I locked the front door.
Well, as soon as Bitsy's around the corner, we're out of here by the back road. And I'll be in the back seat. Those two evacuation packs are still in the garage, right? Go get your passport, please.
Ring-a-ling-a-ling, ring-a-ling-a-ling.
Hi, this is Madge Anderson.
Oh, leave us a message.
Madge, Bob Brinkley here. I guess you're both out checking the neighborhood. I was going to ask if you had a frozen casserole you could bring by when you come to the church. We might have a batch of people to feed. The peanut butter and jelly from the daycare center won't be enough. If you get this message, give me a call. Peace.
I don't think so. The Wilson's cottage up on the lake for now. I know where they hide the key.
George, why are we doing this?
Because it's our choice. Let's go.
All right, let's go.
And that's the show we have for this week. None of GL's scripts, just a remembrance of a big hole in our hearts, our lives. You can't really replace someone like Will. You just have to get on with your life however you are able. So, that's what we'll do, one way or another. I still find myself looking at the place where he used to park his car more days than not for several years. Will, we're going to miss you. Far beyond next week.